Ah, sorry.
When you were talking about exorcism, that's kind of the term from time to time, primordial Buddha. But sometimes when I ask people about it, they just agree not to talk about it as, say, God. And I just wondered if maybe you could fill something in on it.
Okay, so we're talking about absolutism. You're saying you've heard the expression primordial Buddha, and when you ask people about it, it comes out sounding like God in some way, huh?
Well, it's more or less that people that I've asked have not really wanted to go into it.
Yeah.
And kind of like the same way people don't really want to further the conversation when you talk about God.
Mm-hmm.
And
one teacher I asked, well, does that mean that it always existed? Mm-hmm. And they said, yeah, but that's contradictory to what we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the whole thing about primordial Buddha, I see primordial Buddha more as a symbol rather than as a person, okay? As a symbol of you know, what we can become. But even if you posit, because primordial has the idea of everlasting or beginningless, okay? But also samsara is beginningless. So where the confusion, how primordial Buddha could look like God, is if you start thinking that there was a beginning. So if there was a beginning, then, you know, when God created Buddhas and sentient beings, yeah. But it's not like that, because anybody who's a Buddha was once ignorant, like us. Yeah. And there was no beginning to the continuity of our mind streams. There was no beginning to the ignorance. So primordial has more the idea there that you can't find a beginning. But if there, you know, is somebody who's a Buddha now, they may have attained enlightenment gazillions of years and eons ago. Yeah, and it's so countless that we may say it's primordial, but actually before that they were a sentient being just like us. That's why I see it more as like a symbol of what we can become. But don't see it as some inherently existent, originally pure Buddha who somehow magically appeared without any causes. Yeah?
So, in this example, that we have empirically, it seems as though there's beginning, middle, and end to things. So when Buddha can ask us to imagine beginning of time,
mm-hmm.
which is the same as maybe infinity. Mm-hmm. I kind of see it as like infinity on that end and beginning of time on that end, and I'm still, you know, back in beginning, middle, and end. And I'm just wondering, are we supposed to just take on faith that there is such a thing as beginningless next?
Okay, so are we supposed to take on faith the thing that there's beginninglessness? I don't see it as a thing of faith, okay? The way I see it is, remember when you study the number line? Yeah? So from zero you look one direction, there's one, two, three, four, and there's no end on that direction. You know, there's no end. It just keeps on going because you can always ask one more. I always have one more. Okay? If you look the other way, there's minus one, minus two, minus three, minus four. And again, there's no end that way because you can always lessen one more. Okay? So if you look at it that way, if you look at zero as being the present, which is always changing, yeah, then there's a beginningless past and there's an endless future. Yeah.
Is there a lot of text and, you know, philosophy? You're going to have plenty of philosophy. Is there a lot of writing on this? Or
No, there's not a lot of writing. I think it's just assumed that people can imagine infinity. Yeah? And I think what gets us hung up is our Western education, in which there was a beginning of the world, we're living in the middle, and then there's going to be an end of the world. Yeah? And in Buddhism, if you look at any, if you look at some objects, see, here's a difference between impermanent and eternal. Impermanent means it changes moment by moment. Okay? Things can change moment by moment, but it doesn't mean they're going to last forever. Okay? This book changes moment by moment, but it's not going to last forever. And the book, the book had a beginning, middle, and end. Okay? Just in terms of what we happen to label as book. At a certain point, things come together. We give it the label book. And at that point, you can say the book has a beginning, middle, and end. Yeah. But if you look at the things of which the book is made up, and if you try and trace them back, yeah, maybe you get to the Big Bang, but I don't think the Big Bang is some kind of absolute beginning, because the Big Bang also had a cause. And if everything was packed so tightly together, they say there was no time and no space. I'm not quite sure I can grok that. But, still there's cause. We can't go beyond cause and effect if things are impermanent. They have to. They exist within a system of causation. Okay? So, certain objects, like we could say our universe. We look at our universe, everything that is here. We could say maybe this universe had a beginning and a middle and an end. But there's many, many universes. And before the beginning of this universe, there were other universes. And after the end of this universe, there's going to be other universes. Okay? So if, the beginning of this universe was, the Big Bang, well then there were, before the Big Bang, there were other things that existed. And if the end of the universe is the Big Crunch, then after that, there's other things that exist. So it's just this whole idea of continuity due to causes and conditions. Because you can, it's very difficult to posit any first cause to anything if you look at its continuity. Yeah?
This is the point where I would go insane.
Why do you go insane?
This is my mind quits working. It doesn't make any sense.
But this is dear to me. Again, I think this is like, wow, this is fantastic. And it doesn't matter, we can't grasp it. I mean, it's really like math. You just keep on adding one more. Yeah?
No.
So,
that's very interesting to me. When we talk about how each moment of mind is dependent upon a previous moment of mind, and if you take it in little chunks, you don't have to swallow the whole thing in that.
Yeah.
But it makes logical sense at that stage.
I think it's our mind that feels secure by saying there's a beginning, middle, and end. Yeah, it makes some feeling of security. But also, if you have an absolute beginning, an absolute middle, and an absolute end, then things really become nihilistic. Because if nothing exists after death, then how come when we're suffering we don't all kill ourselves? Wouldn't that be the best way to end samsara? Yeah? If after death there's nothing, then the best way to end our samsara is to commit suicide. Okay? This is completely counterinductive to our feeling, isn't it? Yeah? Would any of you teach your children, you're suffering, go kill yourself? No. Okay? But if you have this absolutist view, You know, you get to that conclusion at one point. Tom, you had something? Or somebody back there, or Joe, sorry. Yeah, there's a lot of things that are eternal, okay? But again, eternal just means it doesn't go out of existence. But something cannot go out of existence but still change moment by moment. So you have the continuity of mind. One moment of mind produces the next moment, produces the next moment, produces the next moment. There's no way you can stop the continuity of mind because one moment of mind automatically produces another. So the mind is eternal. It doesn't end because there's nothing that can act as a counterforce to stop the existence of the mind. But the mind is changing moment by moment by moment by moment. Yeah. So when you look at that closely, you can see there's nothing in there that's an inherently existent mind. Because whatever was there is gone the next moment. Yeah, there's a difference between eternal and permanent. Permanent means it doesn't change moment to moment. Eternal means it can change or it cannot change, but it never ceases. It never goes totally out of existence. There's a lot of things that are permanent and eternal. For example, if we say the emptiness of the mind. Okay? The emptiness of inherent existence is a permanent phenomena because it's an absence, it's a negation of something. So it's not created because it's permanent, but it eternally exists because its basis, the mind eternally, is there. But remember, eternal does not mean absolute and permanent. Yeah? And here's where it's so important to understand this whole thing about mental labeling. Yeah? But we talk about the continuity of mind, and each moment of mind is different from the preceding moment of mind, but it's still called mind. It's still given the same name, even though it exists, each moment of mind is something different. Just because we give it the same name doesn't mean it's inherently existent. Okay, this is where we get caught up. Yeah, we think because it has one name that we're talking about a soul or some inherent existence in it. Not at all. The name, the name is not the base. The name is just a conventionality, a conventional term that's used to help us communicate. Yeah.
Is someone choosing the cause and effect of karma and consequences?
Mm-hmm.
Is that always been and always will be? That seems like a thing like emptiness is always.
Yeah. Yeah, the law of karma and its effect, that's just a natural law. It was not created. It's just the way things are.
This is it. Because that's kind of like, when you say it like that, it sounds like,
no, because again, cause and effect is, we're making it into a law of cause and effect. It's our conceptual mind giving that word on a whole system of things that are happening. We can just, if you want to take away that word, you can see that one thing produces another thing, produces another thing. And that one thing was produced by something that was produced by something that was produced by something. Okay? So don't make the law of karma and effect like some kind of written law, some superimposed thing that's there. It's just a term that describes a process. Okay? Yeah. Yeah. That's just the way things function.
But when we say karma,
no, no, karma isn't inherently existent.
No, it lacks inherent.
Yeah, it lacks inherent
existence.
Of inherent
existence. No.
But, yeah.
Not like a nihilistic point of view, but that only exists because this causes the condition for it to exist.
Right.
Right. And if there's no cause of precondition, then it ceases to exist.
Yeah. What's coming together is emptiness and dependent arising. Okay? Because things are dependently produced, they can't absolutely exist. Because absolutism implies no causes and conditions. It implies that something has its own nature. If something has its own essential nature inside of it, then it has no need of causes and conditions to produce it, because it has its own immutable, unchanging, you know, nature that has always existed. So when you assert inherent existence, you're negating dependent arising. Yeah? When you assert dependent existence, you automatically contradict independent existence. Independent existence is the same as inherent existence. Okay?
So is the Buddha mind always changing then?
Yeah. The Buddha's mind is eternal, but the Buddha's mind is impermanent. It changes moment by moment. Yeah, no mind is permanent, but it can be eternal. Yeah. Yeah, I haven't gotten past the first one. That's why you don't have the other two. Okay, we got caught in a group,
Why would we never get 20 years of that philosophical
thing? Yeah.
20 years
to do a couple of points. Yeah. Did you have? Yeah, I think I'll save those for tomorrow because we're at the end of the session now. Okay. So just,
I don't understand this argument. I can find it. You're talking about, I'll just do it from my head. God can't have created the world because, why? Because this is what I don't get. If you're making soup, you're creating soup. I don't think of it as me who's making the soup who's the one who's changing. I think of it as the ingredients that are changing. That's why I don't think that's me. It's just like, there could be this eternal, permanent, whatever kind of God, and the universe could be created. What's the relationship between the two?
Okay, so you're saying, why can't God be permanent and still create the universe? Because if you're going to make soup, you can be permanent, but what's changing are the carrots and the potatoes. Okay, but if you're making soup, doesn't your mind change when you have the intention to make soup? Isn't that a change in you?
Right.
And when you cut the potatoes, aren't you changing?
Right.
And when you're stirring them and and adding the cinnamon? So not only are the ingredients changing, but the agent is changing. And also in the God argument, it wasn't like, there were flesh and bones and all these things out there and God's rearranging them to make a human being. God created those too. They all came from God. So then, where did God have to have changed? You can't have something that's a cause can't be permanent. Because for a cause to produce an effect, the cause has to cease. It has to go, what was the exact thing that existed before has to cease. If you plant a seed in the ground, if that seed remains unchanged, can it sprout? No. If it sprouts, has that seed changed? Yes. The previous seed that existed before no longer exists because it's changed into a sprout. Now you're going to say, but, you know, Sarah had Tom, and Sarah's still here, you know. But the Sarah that had Tom isn't the Sarah that's here now. She also changed in the process.
Eternal and permanent?
Yeah, I think the people believe, you know, like in an original creator, you know, it's eternal and permanent. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What
an
eternal impermanent?
Well, you know, if God is impermanent, then what created God?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I
just
haven't get to that point.
Yeah. I think we're going to have to pause here. So if you want to write your questions down.